This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. A task force in charge of finding solutions to the state's student behavior and school climate issues has delivered its final recommendations. This comes after the group spent months putting together the recommendations to help districts better address increasing reports of student behavior incidents and absenteeism. This week, Delaware Public Media's Sarah Petrowich spoke with Senate Majority Leader Brian Townsend, chair of the Student Behavior and School Climate Task Force, about the group's findings and next steps.
There's obviously a lot here, but give us the highlights of what the task force believes are some of the most crucial changes that need to be made to address student behavioral issues.
There's all kinds of drivers that go into this, but what seems to come out of it is a very serious situation in our schools where a lot of educators and students are frustrated or unimpressed with the status quo, and we've got to do better. Some of the specifics that have come from this are, and this is in, I guess, no particular order, the issue of cell phones. I mean, some districts have already begun moving either through a pilot program funded by the state or on their own to do a better job with limiting the negative role that cell phones can have with regard to students' ability to focus throughout the day on what's really important for them to be focusing on. So figuring out how to implement those programs effectively is something that is already underway at the district level, and we need to figure out what role the state should have in formalizing it, mandating it, funding it, you know, however that looks. So that's one item. Transportation was a key focus. A lot of people think about behavior or other issues in the school classroom, in the hallways, but so much of what happens starts on the buses on the way to school or on the way home. We've long known that there is a challenge with recruiting and retaining bus drivers, given the lagging pay rates that they have seen over the years. There have been recent increases, but the reality is there's a really good question of whether or not, in addition to the drivers themselves, there should be additional staff on the bus so that the driver can focus on the safety of the road and the staff member can focus on what's going on with the students. There's a key question that had come up more towards the end of the task force is whether legislation a few years ago meant to support students actually might cause implementation challenges or impossibilities for schools. And it has to do with data and tracking and designating students. And essentially, you might have a situation where you have rightfully wanted there to be a concentration of students that are going through challenges in a place. But by doing that, you might actually cause problems for the institution, the school, or the program that is meant to serve the students with regard to additional reporting requirements that really just take away from the fact that the whole point of that program was to take on the most challenging students. So we're taking a look at whether the law needs to be changed to make strike the right balance between, yes, transparency and reporting and data, but also not kind of tying the hands of the programs or the schools that need the support most. I guess I probably should have started, honestly, one of the most important items is the issue of in-school programs for students who are going through behavior issues versus out-of-school programs. And we did learn that there have been some out-of-school programs that have been around for many, many years, but have not seen an increase in funding in literally decades. And the question is, how effective are those programs? Apparently very effective by certain measures. And so figuring out the totality of what the programs involve and what they are doing well or could do a better job of while also bolstering their funding is a pretty important item. And then the issue of in-school alternatives. So it might make sense to have a student leave the school building and go to an alternative placement for a period of days or weeks, or in some cases, even months. But what about the having options in the school building? At the heart of this, Sarah, is school funding and what funds flow to what school buildings for what students for what purposes. And we know very much now that educators are at, you know, a tipping point with regard to their willingness and ability to continue bearing the status quo as they try to do the miracle worker job that we ask of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to get to the funding part of this a little bit later, because that is honestly probably the most important piece of the puzzle here. But as you were just talking about, there is a section on more professional development for teachers, you know, to help address these issues in the classroom. And I think in my listening into the meetings, you know, teachers are largely saying that they simply don't have the time or the staff, right, to manage the behavior of a classroom while also getting through a curriculum. And then administrators, you know, are also saying that they're doing the best that they can with the support and the staff that they have, but, you know, they need more parental support and more engagement on their behalf, which is also addressed in the recommendations. So I'm curious if, following all the presentations and the meetings, if you see one group here that could use some more devotion to the issue, or if we really just do need, you know, change at every level.
We definitely need change at every level. The issue of professional development for educators, it's a topic that comes up in so many different areas. And some people, maybe not in recent years as much as prior to that, had been like, oh, let's go ahead and, you know, do some more PD for educators on that topic. And that's just not, the magic solution here is not more PD for educators. There is no doubt that there needs to be an ongoing commitment to restorative practices and understand that you can't just kind of like remove someone and call it a day and expect they're going to like literally in some cases heal just by having been removed. So there is a process to try and maximize, that's what they call it, restorative, like restoring those students to being on a path where they can try to fulfill their potential. It's very important that educators learn that, embrace that in an iterative way. We need to hear from educators about how it's going. So it's not so much that legislators need to be involved in that process, classroom educators and their supports, as well as building and to some extent district leadership, need to be involved in that conversation of how it's going and how to make it go better. That is a piece of this, but it's only a piece of it. And so that's, I think, why it was not highlighted near the top of the list.
More towards the top of the list, there's actually an entire category devoted to multi-tiered systems of support, or commonly referred to as MTSS. And those maybe not hyper involved in education, including myself, don't necessarily know what that is. It's also my understanding that Delaware already has some legal guidelines for MTSS. So I guess briefly, can you break that down a little bit further and why it gets its own category?
So MTSS is a system that's already in place through through regulations. I don't recall if it required legislation a few years ago. And the idea overall is that you've got, both from an academic and non-academic perspective, this system that can help help guide students, help guide educators in interacting with the students. And I want to say sort of track, but not like in a negative way, and not like sort of in a nefarious kind of data, big government tracking sort of way, or private sector data, you know, use of data. Is just the idea of just following a student through the process and being able to identify trends on the basis of what they're going through, and assuming that everyone plays their part, assuming that educators are able to log it, assuming that administrators at the building level in particular, and counselors are able to play their part, that you're able to kind of follow the student along both academically and non-academically, and identify broader trends, but also identify when there may be sort of like trigger points for a student where they seem to maybe be on a path where they're going to then escalate to a pattern of behavior, or likely enter into a sort of a zone in their life, a phase in their life where they might then kind of escalate to a place where they become one of those students that people think of more commonly as troubled students. Overall, we have a system in place that if we allow it to unfold and we implement it with fidelity, that there's reason to believe that we will be able to identify those students that really could use some help here or there, so that they don't go from a very low risk situation to a higher risk situation. And then those students who are clearly entering into the higher risk situations really try to get the intervention for them that can be all the difference in the world between them having an incident in school that could set them back for months, if not years.
And then really going back to the funding piece, right? So, I mean, a lot of these recommendations, almost if not all of them, are going to need funding, right? I mean, there's several suggestions of hiring more behavior analysts, increasing state oversight of, you know, individualized education programs or IEPs, looking into reducing class sizes, conducting more research, et cetera. You know, the list goes on. There is a committee, as you referenced before, called the Public Education Funding Commission, that's already in the process of determining if Delaware should invest the magic numbers we keep hearing, $600 million to $1 billion more in education, and if we should rework our entire public education funding structure. So really, my question is, how realistic do you think it is that these recommendations get the necessary funding? And I guess, how will those tie to the conversations that commission is having right now?
I think it ties very much into it. I think it's not the only piece of it, but I think it's a big piece of it, because the behavior issues are not just because some students are coming to school with their stomachs empty. It's not just that some students are coming to school with other kinds of trauma from home, but that's part of it. Some of the behavior issues we see are, I think, to some extent, extensions of natural growth and development in children into adolescence, into young adulthood, and sorting those feelings out and sorting things out. There's so many different aspects of what can lead to student behavior challenges and school climate issues. Really, at the end of the day, all of them are relevant to the funding conversation, but the funding conversation is slightly broader than that, because it also has implications for students who essentially never have and probably never will go through, you know, certain behavior issues. So it is all related. And to the first part of your question about mental health, I mean, there have been a very key growing focus on mental health supports in schools the past several years. But I think what came up in the conversations of our group was the sort of the realization, or at least the question about whether or not the conception of that had been sort of very kind of medical driven from behavioral health perspective, and maybe not as expansive as we needed to be in terms of understanding that some of the manifestations of people going through what people might consider mental health challenges could be from some of the drivers I just mentioned. I don't know if we can, or frankly should, draw the starkest line between, or even try to draw a stark line between what is sort of properly or clinically considered a mental health issue, but not student behavior, and vice versa. Because I think there's a strong overlap. And so figuring out what kinds of staff supports, what kinds of credentialed professionals need to be in the schools to help sort out these issues, help students through these issues, so that classroom educators can focus on the academic enrichment as well as the non-academic extracurricular enrichment. We have to figure out that balance.
Another topic that was talked a lot about during the meetings was developing a more age-appropriate curriculum or incorporating play more so into curriculum for children. And I know that that's something, teachers, administrators, and parents have all kind of been talking about. It's not a new concept. So is that something that the task force really strongly wants to recommend or look forward to in the future?
Absolutely. It's a topic that came up during the task force. It had been a topic that was being discussed already, but in other corners prior to the task force. But we want to harmonize those streams of conversations and understand that play-based learning, play-based curriculum can be something that we have not done enough of over the years. Maybe got too focused on testing or older learner style teaching that really doesn't reach our youngest learners at that age in the way that we maybe thought it would. So we've got to do more play-based learning and curriculum so that our youngest learners are reached, they develop momentum, and they can really, get going in ways that might avoid some of the behavioral issues that might happen later if we are not effectively educating them at the youngest ages.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think wrapping up here, really just the question is kind of what are next steps? I mean, I know that whenever the AIR report came out, which talked about that funding piece of, the extra $600 million, and reworking the funding model, there was a joint hearing where they presented that report. I guess I'm curious, is something like that going to happen for this report as well? And do you see the committee meeting again in the future?
Certainly. So the committee expired like on election day by the operation of how the law often works on it with task forces and committees. One of the immediate steps, I believe, is to try to reconstitute the group through legislation for at least 2 years, if not longer. And I think quickly sort out which of these recommendations need to involve legislative changes, but perhaps not have a fiscal impact, which items might involve regulatory changes, which items might involve just school districts or building level decision making. I think kind of sorting into a few categories of what has to be state level law, state level legislation versus state level regulation, what can be more local district level, what involves money, what doesn't involve money. We just kind of sort out the different categories, and I think just move as quickly on each of them as possible.
Thanks to State Senate Majority Leader Brian Townsend, Chair of the Student Behavior and School Climate Task Force, and our Sarah Petrowich for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, a look at what to expect during this year's holiday shopping season. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.